Well, thanks, Denise. Welcome to the Old Mole, Emily Drabinski.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, Emily Drabinski was recently elected to be the president of the American Library Association. Her role from now until this time next year will be as president-elect, and then she'll serve her year-long term as president, and then after that, another year as the sitting past president, totaling 3 years. She's also currently a librarian of the Mina Reese Library of the CUNY Graduate Center in New York. Well, Emily's worked in libraries for more than 20 years and has a background as a labor organizer too. Excitingly, she put these together when she ran for the ALA president on an inspiring platform of collective power for public good. It centered building unions in libraries, offering organizing education in library programming, and promoting a full spectrum of public goods and services outside of libraries. Well, before we talk about your campaign and vision for libraries in America, can you first tell us a bit about your background in libraries and with labor organizing?
Sure. So I started in libraries in 2001. I had been working for Lucky Magazine as a fact checker. It was like a magazine about shopping. And I made a mistake and I printed the number for like Saks Fifth Avenue on a spread about Barney's and got in so much trouble. I sleepless nights for a week. Was I going to get fired? Really intense. And I was like, I don't want my life to be consumed by the price of handbags. And that was a low moment in my life, but I just on a whim put in my application for a job at New York Public Library, got into their trainee program. So you could work in the library as a trainee doing sort of adult services, youth services, a little bit of everything, and they would pay for part of your library degree. So I did that, got my degree from Syracuse University's online program, worked for about 6 months as an indexer for the Social Science Index of H.W. Wilson. I was an area studies indexer. I had it for 6 months, landed my first academic job at Sarah Lawrence College, served as a reference librarian there for 4 years, got a job at Long Island University's Brooklyn campus, which was my first professional union position. And when I took that job, instantly got, I think, a $23,000 a year raise, and my annual leave was doubled or even tripled. Like, I just, the union difference was so intense and profound in terms of my quality of life. So I worked there for 10 years and then came over here to the Graduate Center at the City University of New York, and that's where I work now.
What about your background with labor organizing? What work have you done? Where have you learned how to organize?
You know, I grew up in a family that was pro-union in Idaho, which is kind of rare in Idaho, but I definitely had one of those. My dad was in the Postal Workers Union when I was a kid for a brief time and organized with his colleagues to get shorts to be allowed during summer. So there was like always a sense that unions were important in my family. And I knew from a very young age that, you know, you always support the players in a baseball strike, like you're always on the side of the workers. But, you know, you can know that in your brain, and then you can know that because you experience what management does to workers and the ways that the union is the only way that you can fight back in any kind of meaningful way. So when I got to LIU Brooklyn, that university is home to the first private higher ed union in the US. Anyway, but LIU was a mighty fighting faculty union and had been for a very long time. And I got there and like 2 years later, I was on strike for the first time in my life, something that I thought happened in the olden days, you know, like I'm coming, you know, I'm like in the library, so we're not longshoremen. So I thought that the union would sort of negotiate the contract and then give it to me and then I would enjoy its benefits. And so then I was on strike and it was just mind altering, future altering experience. It's incredibly frightening. It is incredibly exciting. It is incredibly empowering. And we were only out for like 4 days, 5 days. And I show up to the ratification meeting with everybody else. We're all in our t-shirts and they give us the contract and then ask us to ratify it like 20 minutes later. And I was like, oh, well, I thought we were going to like talk about this and decide whether or not we agreed with it. You know, I thought we were going to just deliberate as a democratic collective. And we didn't really. Then we ended up ratifying a contract that included a bunch of cuts to the annual leave and earning potential of the librarians in the unit. And there were only about 13 of us in a 300 person unit. Our pay was docked more than we earned in the raises over the life of the contract. You know, all these things that you end up with a disappointing contract. And I think that's very normal, but it was like eye-opening to me where I was like, oh, if I want this to be different, I have to go and do it. So that's sort of where I got started. At the end of that contract, 5 years later, and we are bargaining again, and for the first time in the history of higher education in the United States, the faculty was locked out at the end of contract negotiations. And that, like, there's being on strike and then there's being locked out. You're like fired en masse. You have no say in when you go back to work. You're not getting paid. Your health insurance is canceled. They've hired scabs to teach all the classes. It happened over Labor Day weekend, and it just was the most intense experience of management power that I'd ever seen or heard about. It's like unheard of, right? Like, I have lots of union friends and that hadn't happened to them. Your longshoreman has happened to you, but if you're in the library, it doesn't happen, you know, because like you can't have a university without teachers. And so it was like, oh, they don't care about that. They care about control and they care about profit. Even in nonprofits, they care about revenue generation and they care about control. And they're willing to put 300 people out of work in New York City with a day's notice because they want those things more than they want the university to continue. So that's where I really learned my organizing chops. I learned like how important it is to be prepared when management comes at you like that. I learned that management is always going to management, right? That it doesn't matter if they're good people or nice people, or you have a good time in their meetings. And like, even if you're really good friends, and I have very good friends on the other side of the fight, but in those moments of antagonism, there's nothing personal there. You're just part of these forces. And that if you want to counter management tools, which are vast, right? They have so much capacity. You have to build that power together. So I learned a lot from our organizers with the American Federation of Teachers. I learned a lot from colleagues in Labor Notes, people in the Teamster for a Democratic Union. Everybody sort of saw what was happening to us and knew that if we could organize and push back against that, that it would be a labor win for everybody, which I think in the end of the day it was.
So how did you decide then to turn those experiences on the strike line, being locked out with Labor Notes and as a librarian into the campaign for the ALA president?
So for me, I think once I organized with others, you know, in pursuit of some goal that we shared that was about justice and equity, like I just always want to be organizing. So when the pandemic hit, I took over as interim chief librarian at my library. So I was out of the unit, right? I was management. That's the first time, and I'm guessing it may be the last time I'm in a management position. But what it meant was that I could not organize with my comrades around wages and working conditions at CUNY. So where am I going to put that energy, right? I look at the world and like, if you're not organizing to make the world different, I'm not sure how you get up every morning because it's very dismal and very grim. And I'm a believer in workplace organizing now that I've done it. That's just where I want to put my energies, and all other kinds of organizing work is important too. But what I saw was library workers very angry, put into unsafe situations, facing layoffs and furloughs that they had no control over, and just like all this stuff that is always going to happen to you at some point in your working life, but it never really happens en masse to everybody in a field all at the same time. Like the pandemic did seem to me to be a mass organizing event, right? If we say management is the best organizer, and I definitely believe that, we were all organized by management in this moment, right? We are subject to the whims of people who, in many cases, don't care if we live or die because they're not thinking about us as people. Wouldn't say it to our face, but when dealing with a class of people are like fine rendering some of us disposable. And so I thought like it was really kind of on a whim that ALA, because it represents my workplace, like essentially it's like library workers or librarians, and we can talk more about that. So an association that does a lot of advocacy work, but maybe has less experience or less, like currently does less work around organizing, without an analysis of collective power, maybe I could go in and bring some of that energy and do some cool work. But then you win and you have to govern. And I saw a great talk by Barbara Mattaloni once. She ran as part of a reform slate in the Massachusetts Teachers Union. And out of the slate, she was the only one who won, and she was the president, you know? So like, what are you going to do? So now I'm like, oh, that was fun. But organizing for what we want out of ALA with me in a leadership position and what that's going to look like, that's the project for me going forward.
one of your big planks is bringing unions into libraries, but also bringing unions and organizing education into the types of things that libraries offer and support the public with. Can you talk a bit more about both of those?
I think the state of labor education in this country is not strong, right? Almost none of us grow up anymore in strong union households. We're not, you know, as unions have been actively decimated by capital in the state over the last many decades, most of us don't understand how unions can make a difference in the quality of our lives. And if you look, every time if you're unionized, you'll make more money every time. And you'll hear people say, well, I was able to negotiate for a higher rate because of how special and awesome I am, and the union would make it so I couldn't do that. And so I also think like a sense of the collective is really not robust in this country, maybe to say the least. And so we have to give people both the language to talk about a collective experience that we're all having, which is, you know, increasing management control and decreasing wages. And for people to understand that that's not special or unique to them or their library, but is in fact something that every worker is experiencing, and that the remedy is not making a better argument or being madder in public, it's organizing, you know, in really specific and material ways to get what's ours. And so that's just not a conversation that people are able to have most of the time, because most of the time people who ascend to a position like president of ALA are like, they're not unionists. You know, they may be pro-union, but they're not, you know, I'm a true blue believer, you know? So I think, I mean, someone at the top who could talk about unions and make sure that they're a part of every conversation we have about libraries as the primary mechanism for change in most of our institutions, there's value in just like from the 30,000 foot view, like we're talking about labor. And my hope is that that will make it easier for people to talk with their colleagues on the ground, because we need language around it.
When you talk with folks who work in libraries, I think you have a spectrum of perspectives on power. And there's famously, you know, this commitment to neutrality in libraries as like how we are foundation of a pluralistic democratic society. And at the same time, there are a lot of ways in which that very project itself is inherently political and draws on other political projects in the context of, you know, human society. How do you see bringing those two elements together to make better libraries?
When you think about libraries as a site for democracy and universal access to knowledge and information, and a place where all different viewpoints can get heard in the public square, I mean, I'm for all of those things, but I'm a materialist. And so I know that if I'm going to have one book on the shelf, it's going to take up that space on the shelf to the exclusion of another book that could equally sit on that shelf, right? And so every decision that we make about space and resource allocation, which is really all libraries do, right? Like at the, like I know we're all supposed to be innovating and thinking about the library of the future, but at the end of the day, we occupy real estate in our cities and towns. We produce space for people to come in and use the bathroom and sit down and plug something into an outlet and maybe get a book or take their kid to a reading or do a craft program or whatever, right? Like it's public, you know, we take money shared with us, like that everybody should share it in common, and we use it to buy things like staplers and envelopes and books and TVs and whatever. So like that's inherently a power project, because it's a project of allocating resources to some things and not others. And so there's no universe where that's not a real thing in the library, which is what I love about it. I think of it in terms of that, like our job is as stewards of the public purse, right, of the social wage. We decide where it goes, and that's a position with a whole lot of power. And I think we don't do ourselves any favors by pretending that it isn't, right? And then in fact it is, and it means that we want to have more power, we want to take up more real estate, we want to expand, and we want like more of the public inside of our buildings and more of the people in our communities working with us and for us. And so that's like inextricable from a political project. And like, you can only imagine that you're apolitical if you are dominant, right? None of us who have any experience as non-dominant in any way, you know, you know that it's not neutral, because you can't find books about yourself on the shelf. They frisk you when you walk in. They think you have a gun when you walk in the door. Like we know that these are not apolitical projects. And so the idea that it's neutral the push to sort of maintain that as a core tenet of librarianship is like a commitment to a status quo that excludes a lot of us.
And one way libraries are not neutral is how in every library system in this country, you will find programs and other things offered by the library that teach you how to start a small business, mm-hmm. how to enhance your entrepreneurial skills, how to monetize your hobbies that reflect the interests, ideas, and values of commerce. And the reality is that most of our patrons are working class and are not necessarily looking to leave their jobs. And they have rights as far as what they can do about their work conditions and other things that happen to them at work. And there's a role for libraries to be playing in promoting democracy at work if they are champions of democracy.
Absolutely. Yes.